Hey there, I'm Shane Anderson, producer on Schwartz Media's daily news show, 7am. This is The Weekend Read. Every fortnight on the show, we feature the best long-form writing in Australia, read to you by the people who wrote it. Today on the show, Elmo Keep, with her piece from a recent edition of The Monthly. Out on the Las Vegas Strip, in a sea of casinos, sits an enormous dome that lights up the sky. It's called Sphere, a performance venue where punters are dazzled by 54,000 metres of LED screens capable of showing 256 million colours, in a display so overwhelming that some concertgoers faint. Writer Elmo Keep travelled to Vegas to see her favourite band U2 play at the Sphere in their inaugurating residency. There, she found, in equal parts, a religious experience and a hyper-capitalist nightmare. Elmo will read her story, Where the Feats Have No Name, after a short conversation. Elmo, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. Hello.
Hi. So you got to go to Las Vegas and see U2 live for this story, which is incredible. I wanted to start by asking you about your history with U2, because I hear that you're a bit of a super fan.
I mean, I do. I absolutely adore U2, and I have since I was 12 years old, and I ended up being taken to see the Zoo TV tour, which was in 1993. And Sydney Football Stadium, there's something, I think that capacity is like 70,000 people. And my memories of it are so, like, overwhelming. You know, like, you're 12, you're shorter than everyone, kind of wandering around. It's so loud. And it was also so hot. It was the end of November and it would have been 30, 38, 39 degrees. It was so hot. So everything about it was so overwhelming, and I'd never seen anything live before apart from having been taken to Elton John when I was even littler, which I forget because I fell asleep. Sorry, Papa. And the Zoo TV tour was like absolutely multimedia overload. That was the idea of the show. So there's like dozens of these big black screens at one end of the stadium playing all of this different mixed media, never stopping. It was just, so that was their idea. Their idea was, we're here in the 90s, we're in a world of now ceaseless news cycle. People are becoming very overwhelmed and confused by information. What would happen if that was also at a rock show? And that was what they did. And so for me at 12 years old, like, you're so pre-cynicism of judging anything, you know, like, I wasn't aware, like, you two are a little daggy or whatever. But on that record and on that tour, that which is Achtung Baby, which is what they were doing at the Sphere, just 30 years old, that album is a really great record, whether you enjoy or hate U2. I think it's difficult to judge it otherwise. It was just such a risk that they took creatively to tear up what they'd done and make this really, like, industrial, heavy, European-influenced rock record. You know, I like joking with everybody in my life. It's like, you know, U2's, like, pretty much the longest continual relationship that I've had, which is, like, going back many years now, and it's been difficult because they've been shit for a long time, up until this amazing, amazing experience. So that's the story of how I came to be tragically in love with U2.
Mm. I mean, and this story almost brings you full circle in a way, because you've got this holy union of U2 and this grand new technological marvel, referred to in your article as a post-stadium. Can you tell me a bit about the Las Vegas Sphere? Like, could you describe it for the uninitiated?
Oh, wow. It's one of those things that to experience it is the only way to really explain it or understand it, which is terrible for a writer to be saying. But it's a space where when you enter, you're inside a giant sphere. You're inside a dome, continuous dome above you, and it is like 15 stories tall to the ceiling and as wide across. And people are sort of comparing it to saying, it's like, it's imagine if it was in a giant, all-immersive IMAX. And that, in a sense, is actually what it is. It is actually a cinema that they've also put a band in. And I sort of came away from that with some, you know, negative feelings about how that sort of neutered the passion of a live show, in a sense. because people were so comfortable. It's like you're in a temperature controlled, like people treated it like their lounge room. You know, there are some people, when I went the second night and I was standing on the floor, and there were some people around me who become so, you know, like entitled to their space. They'd be like, hey, can you just move? I'm like, hey, can you just get lost? You're at a rock show. If you don't want to be like crushed up against someone, go to the back, you know? So it sort of creates this too much comfort. But when you're in there, it is all around you, everything you can see, and it is also all around you, everything you can hear. So when you turn your head in any direction, you're surrounded by perfect sound in your ears. And even that on its own is something that to experience as a human being for human ears, it's like, wow, I feel a little, like a lot of people felt very discombobulated by it. Some people have been made unwell by that, by feeling like, whoa, okay, I'm dizzy, I'm out of here. But even for me, who's like, you know, I am a musician and I play a lot of music and I'm exposed to a lot of music, I was just like, wow, this is so intense. There's nowhere to turn your head away from it for a second if you want to.
What is it, do you think, that makes U2 the perfect band to, I guess, launch the Sphere into the world? Like, why not Elton John?
Oh, why not Elton? I mean, he's probably very dirty that he's retired before he could get in there and make a show with, like, you know, David LaChapelle. Like, the thing about the space is that you have to be a visually inventive band, and you two always have been. Like, going back to Zoo TV, that was the first time that they had, like, entire staging crew and a production company and people putting together, and always Brian Eno has worked with them on that. And so the visual identity of U2 shows has always been extremely strong. So they're like tailor-made to do this. And their music is so emotional, so sweeping. It was, you know, it lends itself to these ideas of wide spaces. Like the Joshua Tree is a record that is just about the American Southwest desert. So you can like see that, and that's what the Sphere is sitting bang in the middle of. So they already had these really nice allusions to their own history that made things work really well when they then were to make, you know, custom art for this. And they also have more money than God. So they are able to choose pretty much anyone to collaborate with who wanted to collaborate with them, to spec make gorgeous art that you'll never see again. Like nothing that was in there will ever be shown anywhere else. It was made specifically for the show. Also, they've worked with the same creative team for so many decades that it really just all looked so seamless and looked like something that they had been thinking about for a long time before making it real. But, you know, like I worry about things like, what sort of benchmark does this set for what does being entertained as a human being mean? You know, how much more overload, how much more can there be after this, in a sense, makes me uneasy, which I sort of come to a little bit at the end of the story. But absolutely would never regret having gone and done it.
Elle Murray, thanks again. Looking forward to hearing you read your piece.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Coming up after the break, Elmo Keep will read Where the Feats Have No Name.
As a 7am listener, you value the story behind the headlines. That's why you should read Post, a free daily newsletter bringing you the top 5 news stories of the day, summarising each of their key points with links to full articles from a range of sources. Get the news you need to your inbox every weekday morning with Post. Sign up at thesaturdaypaper.com.au/newsletters.
Where the Feats Have No Name, U2 UV at Sphere. In all of existence, there are no perfect spheres. Not in nature, not in subatomic particles, not in celestial objects, maybe not even black holes. Certainly not in anything made by human hands. Physics dictates that it is impossible. Information breaks down at the molecular level, rendering even an electron an imperfect sphere, 1/1,000,000,000 of a centimeter off. These are fundamental laws of matter that few of us can understand. In the quiet space age, LED-lit lobby of Sphere, Las Vegas, people are wandering, gazing at giant hanging light features that slowly cycle through a calming blue colour scheme. In the distance, people ride glowing escalators up to their seats at a pace set to dreamy, making you feel as if you have entered some kind of starship. The equations used to design and build it are etched barely visible into the black walls. They include the finite element method, geodesic maths, the law of sines, and Snell's law, which all circle back to pi, the ratio of the circumference of any circle to its diameter. Much has been made of Sphere's technical feats in the pursuit of creating the most immersive entertainment venue ever built. That its exterior, comprising 54,000 square metres of programmable LED panels, is capable of showing 256 million colours. That it is 112 metres high and 157 metres wide. The interior screen takes up 15,000 square metres with a 16K resolution, curving around the auditorium's 18,600 seats. Its sound system is made of 1,586 loudspeaker modules, plus 300 mobile modules, and 167,000 speaker drivers. It is a vertiginous audio and visual experience that envelops you at every inch, which has caused some people to pass out within it. It is the purest distillation of experiential design by which we may all be entertained to death, all of which is before you've even done any drugs. I'm ready for the shuffle, ready for the deal, ready to let go of the steering wheel. Zoo Station. When you're driving on the I-15 at sunset, the beauty of the sun sinking gold against the thousands of windows of the most concentrated number of casinos on Earth is enough to make you slam the brakes to avoid a collision with the car in front. Sphere sits among this, oddly iridescent, glowing an artificial blue. A giant marble on the horizon nestled improbably among the towers. As if God might one day get sick of the city and reach down to flick the orb with giant angry fingers, knocking it into the buildings. You awaken in Las Vegas mid-morning to people blearily shuffling through the casino floors with oversized beers and foot-tall margaritas and judge them degenerate. But one day later, it's you. Then you're ambling the strip at 1 a.m. on chemical enhancements that render your disorientation marvellous. Or passing the broad false daylight of the Forum's fountains, where replica statues of Roman gods and chandeliers made of 70,000 crystals make absolute sense to you. Everything seems perfectly regular, just as it should be, as if you have always been here and only just arrived. Time in Las Vegas is famously meaningless, clocks invisible, even if we all carry smartphones now. Turn them off, put them in airplane mode, leave them in your hotel room. We're only here to slide down the surface of things. Back inside the performance space of Sphere, we're in the Colosseum of ancient Rome, where if you look above you at just the right time, a white dove appears to be trapped, flitting among the highest reaches of the dome, only to quickly disappear, an Easter egg for those who pay close attention. Then the space suddenly darkens and we're in Berlin, huge concrete slabs crumbling before us with sand falling between their cracks, as you two grind out the shuddering industrial crunch of Zoo Station, bringing the walls smashing down. And then there is Bono, the last of the rock stars. The screen splits behind him into a giant white cross, displaying his image at its centre at building size, throwing shapes in high definition. In black leather and red rosary beads, he makes a show of slowly putting on his black shades, transforming himself into The Fly, the sleazy character he invented on the Zoo TV tour, where he and U2 cast off the earnest look and sound that had made them world famous on the Joshua Tree. The new U2 gave in to the libidinous lust that pulsed through their 1991 album, Achtung Baby, which at Sphere is belatedly marking its 30th anniversary, being played from start to finish in a show called U2 UV. The band stand on a very small platform, the domed continuous screen of Sphere behind them, while they are within each other's touching distance on a square stage based on a larger version of Brian Eno's LED turntable. As much as they're playing for us, they're playing for each other, Bono unable to keep a broad smile from creasing his still handsome face. He shamelessly inhabits all the incarnations of Vegas showmen. Elvis, wedding chaplain, later tonight we're all getting married. Magician, lounge entertainer who charms with breezy stage patter. He dons a white suit jacket later in the show to croon a short rendition of Sinatra's My Way before screaming into the Sid Vicious version, to whom he is sartorially indebted. He looks $1 million, which you would expect for someone who could gamble $1 million on roulette and it wouldn't touch the sides. The propulsive early tracks of Achtung Baby, even better than The Real Thing, Mysterious Ways, signal that we're here to have a damn good time. The crowd rides waves of electric abandon while the screen displays visuals difficult to describe. At one point, mirrored gold and day-glow animations of Las Vegas history fall behind the band to create an optical illusion that makes it look as if the stage is endlessly rising. I check with a friend if this is really what's happening, as in my enhanced condition anything could be, and I'm assured that this is what everyone else is seeing too. It's impossible as a fan not to revel in Bono's sheer pleasure in performing. Fit as hell, he nearly never sang again after undergoing open heart surgery several years ago. He wrote with terrifying clarity in his 2022 memoir, Surrender, of how close he came to dying on the operating table, mentally conscious throughout anaesthesia. Today, his voice remains one of the most powerful in the history of rock music, holding long high notes and hitting his falsetto. In the sensitive acoustics of Sphere, he can also whisper and be heard perfectly, stopping to tell stories now and then about the album that brought them to this place. At the centre of all this fun, all this communing and joy, is Achtung Baby, the best and most vicious album U2 ever recorded, cataloguing the various woundings of a terrible divorce, is the exact kind of irony that finds its home in Las Vegas, a mecca for contrasting impulses. While sonically thrilling and frequently danceable, the album is phenomenally angry, bitter and vengeful, awash with the anguished hues of sexual jealousy. So you can swallow, or you can spit, you can throw it up, or choke on it. I'm only hanging on to watch you go down, my love. The divorce was that of guitarist The Edge, with Bono channeling the misery inflicted by the end of his boyhood friend's relationship. He changes the words of So Cruel, an especially mean vivisection of infidelity that lays the blame firmly at the feet of a woman who had many men to love her, none of whom were enough. Rather than, "You're so cruel," Bono sings, "Sweetheart, I'm so cruel." A mea culpa 30 years too late that acknowledges that in all affairs of the heart, there are two people. He cops to this again at the end of the song, saying, "Well, that was always only one side of the story." No, nothing makes sense. Nothing seems to fit. I know you'd hit out if you only knew who to hit. Acrobat. You two are, much to the chagrin of their legion detractors, one of the more overtly political bands to ever cross a stage while waving a white flag. On the 1992-93 Zoo TV tour, to which these shows play a remixed homage, the band cut to live video footage shot by refugees of the war in Sarajevo to draw attention to a conflict the world's media had by then wearied of. The images depicted people begging for their lives, who understandably chastised U2's audience for indulging in rock and roll while they were dodging falling bombs, hiding in bunkers without power or food. It was footage so devastating it nearly derailed every show they played across Europe at the time. Our personal inability to influence the atrocities of global events in any way is the impotent position in which we are all still stuck. Social media gives us the illusion of agency, but has always been the case, a handful of extraordinarily powerful actors make the decisions that affect our lives, from how much petrol costs to who will die in war. The true fantasy under which we labour is the one in which we think we can do anything about it. Zoo TV presciently predicted how the 24/7 onslaught of information would warp us as political agents, dizzied by overload. Bono strode the stage, decked out in black Elvis leathers, carrying an oversized TV remote, flipping through live satellite channels beamed onto giant screens. CNN's round-the-clock coverage of the Gulf War, softcore pornography, infomercials, boxing matches. 30 years later, the deluge has only grown to unfathomable volume. Those shocked by the mix of messages could hardly have imagined a world in which kids have seen beheading videos streaming live on Facebook before they've left primary school. Against this, the U2 of today have learned that people crave moments of pure escape, of reprieve, to be taken by awe and not served a pulse lecture at a rock show. In one of the most polarised periods of recent history, the Sphere show is their most politically neutral performance since they first played their high school gym in 1976. Is it wrong to give over to indulgence while the world burns? This is not the question to ask in Las Vegas, where psychedelics are legally sold on Fremont Street, where people fly screaming over your head on a zipline suspended above the crowds, where you can be married and divorced in the same week, where holidaymakers in the 1950s would gather on casino rooftops to watch the distant detonation clouds of atomic bombs set off to the city's north. You two are alive to all of this, and the audience is not let entirely off the hook to forget ourselves. The band were always at their most interesting when they revelled in contradictions, knowing that the best art does not supply solutions. In these current shows, Until the End of the World is visually matched with relentless scenes of climate destruction. During the same song on the Zoo TV tour, the black stadium screens showed enormous burning crucifixes that morphed into fiery swastikas as Bono howled, "Don't let it happen again." It was a time when neo-fascism was rising in Europe, a threat that hasn't diminished in the intervening three decades. It emerges halfway through the show that its bigger narrative is one of climate change. Some hours later, this message will become difficult to parse while standing under the luxurious two-headed shower at Caesar's Palace, wondering how all this water gets to Las Vegas's more than 2 million people from Lake Mead, which has been considered to be in drought for the last 20 years. Love is Blindness, Achtung Baby's final track, is a bleak, searing invocation of the denial of betrayal between partners. Love is blindness, I don't want to see. Love is drowning in a deep well, all the secrets and no one to tell. But here it is reconfigured to mirror our collective denial of what we have done to the planet in our pursuit of comfortable lives. Inside Sphere, we are bathed in the same kind of ultraviolet light deployed to stop people shooting up in public restrooms. All our faces are eerily pallid and grey. As the song progresses through the edges distorted in funereal guitars, enormous black insects appear to settle above us one at a time on the outside of the dome, until by the end of the song, it is completely covered in them, plunging us into a suffocating blackness, buried in dead insect matter. It is profoundly upsetting, and we linger in this feeling for what seems like minutes. I won't describe how you two managed to bring us back to life from this moment, with a performance of another song about a deep, unending source of hope. You might find your own way to see it. But as for how it affected me personally, embarrassingly, words fail, only to say that a part of me is still there. Being here is a kind of spiritual surrender. We only see what others see. A religious experience in a way, like all tourism. Don DeLillo's White Noise. Sphere is the world's most irresistible Instagram trap in a city made of them, where, if you're feeling deranged, you can visit the Museum of Selfies. It is the most photographed barn in America, a phone infuriatingly held up by the person in front of you for almost the whole show. Its $2.3 US billion cost was paid for by one of the world's most notoriously disliked billionaires, Madison Square Garden owner Jim Dolan. From the outside, it is frequently lit with gorgeous images of nature and the earth, or it becomes an enormous emoji whose eyes follow you around. It is an astonishing piece of public art, until it becomes a car commercial. It is often turned into the world's largest billboard, hawking everything from software to insurance. It's not expected to break even for 20 years. Sphere will not kill live music, as some critics of its extravagance have written, and it has certainly not killed you too. Instead, it has been the site of the band's most innovative rebirth, cementing their reputation and that of their many collaborators as the boldest mass-market outfit in music. Achtung Baby stands outside of time as a record that could have been released today, and you two are playing it with a vibrancy as if that were the case. It is a testament to the strength of its songwriting that the visual art, which renders audience and band alike tiny, doesn't overshadow their music, but enlivens it with new depth. By the end of a six-month residency, 700,000 people will have seen this show. That a group of childhood friends well into their 60s is able to reconnect with their artistry on this kind of scale is enough to move even the most ardent cynic. You might be suffering a failure of imagination if you believe that Sphere signifies the end of entertainment, but it could be the end of a certain kind of entertainment. The era of the stadium rock show was already ending, and it's fitting that it's U2, the band that elevated the form with multimedia spectacles over the last several decades, that are hurrying it on. The carbon footprint of carting hundreds of people around for a world tour is difficult to justify. Besides, it's much more pleasant, one would imagine, to retire from the stage by limousine straight to your platinum penthouse suite on the 80th floor of a casino than to suffer the indignities of jet lag and the strange nowhere of interchangeable hotel rooms. That is only for wee pilgrims fortunate enough to journey to it. Sphere will not come to you. Wisely, London rejected plans to build a sphere of its own. Such a venue doesn't belong in a functioning metropolis where people need to go about their lives without the colossal overwhelm of its architecture dominating every part of the skyline and shrinking children like ants in its shadow on their walk to school. But it is the ultimate expression of Las Vegas. The only other place it could conceivably exist is the late capitalist ecological nightmare of Dubai. There it might still stand in some far future, stripped of its precious LED cathodes, plundered like the Great Pyramid was of its shimmering limestone, abandoned in sunken ruins, buried in sand. Sphere lacks a physical immediacy. It both intimidates and attracts, an uncanny allure. It takes a band of U2's ambition and enormous music to turn it into a site of sublime transcendence in spite of its 21st century accelerationist vibe. To conjure emotional intimacy in a place so alien is true alchemy. Only a very select few visually inventive artists, maybe Kraftwerk, Björk, LCD Sound System, could pull off something approaching this show. To conceive of U2 UV took more than 2.5 years, and it features video art and staging commissioned from Marco Brambilla, Ez Devlin, John Gerard, Industrial Light and Magic, Stewfish, and Treatment Studio, with creative direction from Willie Williams, Brian Eno, and Gavin Friday. Whoever it is that comes next, they will be working in U2's shadow. All told, Sphere is too frictionless, its design in some way bloodless, too convenient. It is an engineering marvel that is otherworldly to experience. It is impressive on a scale that is difficult to clock, but it will never displace the sweaty intimacy of a rough and dirty club show. It will never be the majestic marriage of crystal sound and perfect design of the Sydney Opera House. It will never be the filigree grandeur of the Royal Albert Hall. Rather, it is a sleek, temperature-controlled cocoon to transform and protect you for a time from the outside world, from the desert that surrounds it, which, with each passing year, becomes harsher, more fragile, more arid, and more hot. You leave to make your way back to your hotel through the deep, clear cool of the night, wayfinders bombarded by blaring, blazing neon, eyes like saucers, newborn babies evicted from the womb. It will not be the end of live music. It is too perfect a sphere.
To hear more Weekend Reads, you can subscribe to The Weekend Read in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.